All right, here we go. Okay, and a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 82, Retailer Chat with Mike Wellman. I am Chris Mosby.
And I am Caleb Gerard.
Oh, sorry.
Buddy Polk Murray, wake
I'm
up.
I'm here. I'm Murray. I'm Murray Fox. I'm here.
We've already put him to sleep. I'm Mike Wellman. Do I do that now?
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about yourself.
I'm Mike Wellman. I'm a comic book retailer. I also tinker around with writing and publishing.
You there?
I'm
can
here.
You guys,
Mike?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
No, I can.
Can't. Okay.
Cool. Signal, I guess. What did you miss? I'm the co-owner of the Comic Bug in Manhattan Beach, California. We're the closest comic shop to LAX, and we've been open for 9 years now. Before that, I worked at Jeffrey's Comics. I worked at a comic store in North Carolina called S&S Cards and Comics, and also the owner of my own small publishing empire, Atomic Basement Entertainment.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
that's how I met Mike. Actually, he was I want to say it was the con up in San Francisco, WonderCon, that I first met you at. Though it may have been something in L.A., but you were all pimped out, literally.
Yeah, I believe if you're going out to a show, you got to wear your Sunday best. You know what I mean? And, I try to do something that relates to whatever the newest comic, at the time, that was Mac Afro, which is about pimps in space. So
nice.
I had, dude, it's the perfect excuse to wear leisure suits, you know, in places you shouldn't be wearing them. I mean, I had a full closet.
Anywhere.
Sorry?
Which would be anywhere.
Yeah, right? and I don't fit in them anymore, thankfully, you know, for the rest of the world. But this year I'm cosplaying, me and my buddy, we're going to do Vartox and Zardoz, and I'm sure you guys know who that is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's the plan. The cojones to follow through.
You know who Zardoz is? Come on, man.
Oh, Zardoz is awesome. You got to Google that when you have a chance.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very unfortunate outfit with Sean Connery.
And Vartox is basically the comic book version. In Superman comics.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Vartox.
Yeah, the brown vest and the tight brown pants. And mm-hmm. They did a really cool story a couple years ago in Power Girl, the Amanda Conner Power Girl series.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
It's like trying to mate with her. And that's basically my goal at Comic-Con this year is to try to mate with it.
I think you get a cameo in that little backup thing they've been doing in the back of the
book. 50, Channel 52. Yes.
What is that? I might score something there.
Yeah.
Did I blow up your speech?
He wasn't in the chest hair belly button exposing outfit. So.
We will do that though for the people.
Oh, thank you. I think. So let's back up a little bit. So
yeah.
Jeffrey's comments. That maybe that's where I met you. I don't know. I mean, I obviously I have old man memory about this, but. Now, are you – Jeffrey's Comics, obviously, it's gone, which was
no,
a shame.
No, it's not. I don't know. I'm just not there anymore, so maybe that's why it feels that way for you. But they're going strong. The owner, Jeffrey, and I do a public access TV show down here called Comic Book Geeks.
Oh, shit.
And his son has started running the shop for the most part. So, but no, they're still – they're still doing great, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But that's okay.
So, so why retailing? I mean, what a gamble! My God, man, that is a huge gamble, especially 9 years ago.
I guess people think it's a gamble, but it's not a gamble if you're not really equipped to do much else in life. I'm not going to do road work. I'm not the strongest man, at least in the arms, in the hips. That's different. But that doesn't pay. Women are too smart, so they don't pay for
you
that.
You do have childbearing hips. Yes,
oh,
it's true.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
But, no, like, I, and what's funny is, so my partner at the comic bug is Jun Goeku. I don't know if you guys know, or Caleb, I don't know if you know Jun, if you've met Jun.
No.
He's great, and we're very yin-yang, and sometimes that's unfortunate. We have amazing arguments that customers have been witness to, and, you know, it's fun. But he really does, he's, you know, counterbalance, and he's got a very strong business savvy, and I have more of a warm heart that just, you know, welcomes everyone and poor attention to detail and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a good balance. He did not want to hire me when I went to my job interview at Jeffrey's. And so I went to this job interview in 97, sat down with Jeffrey, who's a very eccentric guy, Captain Greedy, and June, and went through the whole job interview process. And Jeffrey loved me. June's like, I don't know about this guy. So, you know, 10 years later, when June was starting the comic bug, he wanted me to be his right-hand man in it. So how the tables have turned. Yeah.
Now we can't survive without you, right?
You know, it's like Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, God. I can see the pictures.
You can't get me.
Very Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, we make a great team, and you know, our store burned down one Wednesday morning, which if you're a comic store owner, the best day to have your store burned down is on a Wednesday, because there's still, you know, if you're in Los Angeles, there's still a whole warehouse full of new product that wasn't in the store that you can go get and set up on a table out in front of the shop and still make a couple thousand dollars. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, so. I can see that.
Yeah.
I remember you posting about that, or I'd seen emails about that. When was that?
That was pre-Facebook. That might have been pre-MySpace. That was 2006. And I'm a late adapter, so yeah, I don't know if we posted about it. It was in Bleeding Cool, and you know, it got a lot of. I mean, here's the thing. I'm a publicity whore, so a lot of people see their store burned down and they think, oh, my life is over. And I see it, and I see a news story. I see a press release. So I'm friends with the local entertainment, the Easy Reader. It's like a local entertainment magazine. You know, like that has these are the bands coming to town, blah blah blah. These are the restaurants you want to eat at. So I called Rob, and I was like, "Hey man, get over here! My store burned down. It's awesome. You got to get pictures." And I mean, we got a lot of press out of it. You know, the city pitched in and gave us some money. And it was, you know, I would say probably the most galvanizing moment of my life, because, you know, the reality is, yeah, your life did just burn down to ashes, but, you know, you could take that and just be devastated and depressed, or you could say, okay, wow, this is what, you know, life has thrown me. Let's kick this thing's butt, you know? So, and that's what we did. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
So how long after the incident was it before you guys had a roof again?
You know, we operated out of that husk of a store for a couple months. Hopefully I don't get lung cancer down the road, because it was nasty. And we bought or we rented pods. You know what pods are?
Yeah.
Those trailers that, you know, and we opened up three pods in the parking lot that, you know, one had graphic novels, one had the week's new releases. So people would go shop in these pods, and we had the register hooked up, and there was like a big, like a loading door at the old shop. So we opened that wide open, and I would just sit in that loading door and ring people up and for a few months. Then we got a little spot, and we landed in our current location at 1807 Manhattan Beach Boulevard in 2008. So,
awesome. Area code 310-372-6704.
Yeah, wow, you got the website up, or you just know it by heart?
You know, see, that's really cool, because I actually, you know, like you may or may not notice, I live in Arizona, and my store of choice used to be Atomic Comics.
Oh yeah, Mike Malvey.
Right. So, yeah. I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, their store up in Mesa, a young lady decided that she was going to make it a drive-through store.
I remember that.
And million, I think $1 million in damage, in water damage, I think, was the estimate.
Yeah.
And he never recovered, and all four of his stores had to be closed. So, I know there's more to the story than that, but that seemed to be the trigger that fired that gun at him. So that yeah. you were able to recover is a testament, man. That is an incredible testament.
Yeah, hold on one sec. Let me just cancel this. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, yeah, he lost, what, $1 million in merchandise. But, you know, with a comic shop, if you look at what a comic shop makes and you break down the categories and what categories do well and which ones aren't doing as well, new comics, heads and tails, I would say probably 65% of our revenue stream is in new comic books, okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, whenever you see a comic shop for sale and, you know, they say, well, we have this much inventory, you know, it's you just got to keep the river flowing, if you know what I mean. And I love back issues and I love the history of comics, but looking strictly at the numbers, it's the new comics that keep the store alive. And we you know, we didn't have fire insurance when the store burned down, and we still don't have it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's expensive and you know, we don't have earthquake coverage. So it's just like, hey, you know what? If all this goes up in smoke, then we just, you know, again, it's the new comics. That's the lifeblood of any comic shop, I think.
Is Diamond still over in the City of Industry? I think that's where it was when I was retailing a million years ago.
They have a drop spot where we can pick up our boxes, but they don't have. I mean, I guess it's a warehouse, but they don't have like people there working and sorting and you know, back when I was publishing a lot more, I could drop off my, you know, cases of comics to be distributed, right? It was so convenient. But now I have to send them off to Timonium, Maryland, and they go through the filter there. So, yeah.
So they don't have that distribution point anymore. Like, I was a retailer back in 88.
So. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was that Killing Joke time?
Killing Joke. It was actually right when the movie came out, when the Burton movie came out. So
okay, yeah, that was when I could finally start letting people know I was a comic nerd and not get beat up.
Yeah, I don't know
what you mean. Yeah, do you guys like remember like I remember like seeing the football jock wear a Batman shirt to school because Batmania was just taking over.
Right.
And I was like, oh wow, that guy's doing it. Maybe I can finally, because you know, when you're in high school, you're just always trying to get laid, and like I had friends that like that you know, I had like five or six friends, we all collected comics, and these other five guys, they stopped buying comics, and some of them actually did get laid. I just stopped telling chicks that I bought comics, but I think they just smell it on me because I was quite the virgin.
Maybe that was my problem. I kept telling too many people.
Yeah, you gotta keep that shit. And then when I met who's my wife now, Carol, yeah, I was a bachelor. I was a slob. And no excuse. I was like 28 years old, and I had a one-bedroom apartment. But I bought a futon, and I would use that as my bed in the living room. And I would just keep my dirty laundry and my comics in this other room with the door closed. And whenever she would come over, you know, I'd just have that door shut. And she thought I had a roommate. She finally peeked her head in like 3 months after her date, and she's like, oh, my God, what is this shit?
And she still married you.
She is. Well, you know, you get her addicted to, you know, certain things. This is the trick. You know, you got to let them see who you are inside as a person, and then it's too late, you know?
I'm guessing it wasn't the dirty.
You thought I was going to say something else, didn't you?
Yeah, was it the dirty laundry that really did it for her, or was it the comic?
You know, she still doesn't do a very good job of keeping up with my laundry, and neither do I. It wasn't it. Yeah, it was just this warm, gushy little heart, you know. It was too late. She's like, I throw this guy back in the water, he's gonna drown.
A pity wedding, okay.
That's funny.
That's so sweet. That's a lovely story.
Well, thank you.
You should write that up. Excuse me. So do you still do publishing?
I do. I haven't published the last comic I published. Sorry. The last thing I published was Kids of Whitney High, which is an actual real rock band in Los Angeles. Have any of you guys heard of the Kids of Whitney High?
No.
Okay, well it's basically it's a special ed school in LA, and the director of the music program, Michael Monaghan, started a rock band out of this music program where, you know, there's kids that are facing all kinds of challenges, you know, from, I can't think of any of them right now, but like, you know, tremendous, tremendous challenges. And, you know, blindness, you know, some are deaf and some are, you know, in wheelchairs and some can't speak. So, and some are, you know, autistic and whatnot. So he's used this music program to get them to open up and, you know, sort of embrace life. And you go to a Kids of Whitney High concert, you know, I mean, the first time I went to see them, I thought, you know, it was going to be like the Jim Rose Circus sideshow, you know, and cynical, you know, you're a cynical young kid, it's like, oh, let's see how this carnival act is. And it was just the most heartwarming experience to see these kids and, you know, mm-hmm. they write all the lyrics to the songs and they're the most tender, sweet songs. And some are like one song is I See Pretty Girls Everywhere I Go. And it's like, hey, I identify with that. So anyway, they played the grand opening of the Comic Bug. And
that's awesome.
Sorry? Somebody was going to say something?
Oh,
that's cool. Yeah, so they played the grand opening at our shop. And afterwards, you know, I was emailing with some of the members of the band. There was a gentleman named Tony Whitfield, who's no longer with us, unfortunately. And some of the teachers. And they were like, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And Vince, one of the guitar player in the band, said, you know, we should do a comic book. And I was like, wow, that's a fantastic idea. So I had meetings with each member of the band and let them all tell whatever story they wanted to tell. And, you know, they all wanted to be superheroes, which was cool. So they're a rockin'. It's kind of like the Kiss comic from the 70s, you know, except we didn't put our own blood in it. But, yeah, I mean, so it's a superhero story with this a special ed rock band. And, you know, I mean, go ahead.
I'm looking at the website. I mean,
that's cool.
They're constantly in performing. I mean, they got like shows like every freaking week, it looks like.
Really? Yeah, I need to go see them again. I haven't seen them in a while. I know they're in that movie The Ringer with Johnny Knoxville.
Really?
Yeah, they're the band at the end of the movie. And
I haven't seen the movie, but yeah.
It's a cool movie. It's different. That was the last thing I published. This year I'm publishing something with Mr. Rafael Navarro. Caleb, do you know who that is?
Of course I do, yeah.
Yeah, Sonambulo. We're doing a time-traveling Western kind of with Nazis and dinosaurs and unshaven cave women. And it's called Guns A-Blazin', which is sort of a – you know, it's the title of the book, but it's also like – dude, you know, we've been, I don't want to say toiling, but we've been, you know, swinging, taking a swing at this industry for 10 years now. And, like, let's do this thing and go out guns a-blazing, you know. Like, if it's successful, awesome. You know, I guess I measure success in that, you know, if it makes me happy. Yeah. Then, but, we're incorporating a lot of the rock band, Fillmore movie poster or rock poster art type vibe. Mm-hmm. Trying to capture that in a sequential kind of storytelling style. It's everything but the kitchen sink. But it's challenging because I've seen books like that where, like, the writer and artist, they just put everything they want in, but they forget that there also has to be a story, you know?
Yes.
So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, we're doing something that's going to entertain and also dazzle the eyes. Raphael is like, he's an amazing artist and, you know, I mean, one of the most fun people to be around. And, you know, we have a lot of the same taste in movies and comics and music. And I kind of liken it to, you know, a Van Halen collaboration where it's like you're working with the best guitarist in the industry, you know, and you just got to babble some shit over it and, you know, no one will notice.
He was nice enough to kill me in one of these comics a few years ago.
Was it Gone South?
Oh, God, I don't remember. It's in my long box. I got to dig it out. I don't remember which book it was, but yeah, I was on this kick to have people kill me in their comics and he was nice enough to do it. So.
Oh, wow.
You begged me for that, didn't you?
Oh, that sounds like Caleb.
Yeah. Well, then there was that, you know, that other thing I do with you in that other comic that you begged me for. But, you know, we're just kids listening, so.
Yeah.
There's the story.
You didn't have to wear pants for the podcast. I didn't say anything about. Never mind. So.
We published about a dozen comics over the last, you know, decade, which is a very poor output, I would say. But, you know, Caleb, you're friends with me on Facebook, so you've seen my rants about Kickstarter and all that. And I really feel like, you know, these endeavors, these dreams that we're living out, these, you know, I'd love to be a comic book writer. That's all I do is, and, you know, I like working at a comic shop on Wednesday, but, you know, I finance everything that I do. And, you know, of course I have a 5-year-old son, so that's slowed down significantly since he was born. I mean, it's just like, you want to tell this story. I want to tell this story. Do it yourself. And that to me is the definition of independence. And if it makes my output a little less, then you'll know anything that I put out, it's something that I truly believe in. I've filtered out 100 ideas that I'd like to do, and I'm taking my best shot, you know?
Right.
Yeah, Chris did that last year. He was part of an anthology book, and yeah, it was all out of pocket, right, Chris?
Yes, it was. I ended up spending about $1,000, I think, all together. It was I took a class, and we took our stories that we were done with, and we all, a bunch of us, not the whole entire class, but a bunch of us chipped in together and got a book produced. So it was
What's it called?
It was Tales. Let's see. I don't remember. Tales from the Comic Experience. Genesis is the name of it.
Okay. So, cool. Well, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I actually got a PDF somewhere. You can get it on Drive-Thru Comics.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, here it is. I'll find it and send you a link. But yeah, the print part of it didn't go too good. We used Kablam, and they all, like, all of a sudden they kind of just forgot about it. And
what do you mean? They forgot to print it, or they forgot?
They just kind of forgot that we had it set up with them, and we never got any of the money out of it. And I know at least one person that I went to school with that got a copy for their son. It was missing pages, which I still need to get her a copy.
Yeah.
They weren't the ones that the people at the class suggested, but we ended up, you know, I was overruled in that department, so I still got all the proof PDF stuff, so we could always have it printed again if anybody else wanted to do it. So
yeah, anyway, I have several nightmare stories with printers. I found a guy that I like to use now, Choice Printing, and I don't think he has a website, but I have his phone number if anybody's interested. He's out of Long Beach. He prints his stuff overseas.
Mm-hmm.
He delivers it, you know, to my comic shop once it's ready. And, I've edited some children's books recently.
Oh, cool.
And we always use him. Brenner Printing is terrible. They really screwed me over on a book that I was doing. It was supposed to be a saddle-stitched book, but they printed it as a square-bound.
Oh.
And would totally not, you know, accept responsibility. Which was cool because my wife, a couple years later, worked at a health club out here that also had some locations in Texas where Brenner is, a $60,000 a month account. And when she became the marketing director, she's like, oh, wow, we print our billboards through Brenner. Did you know they did billboards? I was like, no, but why don't you move that over to another company? And so, pow, take that, bitch.
Nice.
So, there's
the little things that make life worth living, isn't it?
Yeah, really. I'm the small little revenge. Yeah, I hang on to too much stuff, I guess.
No, there's nothing wrong with that, actually.
That's petty.
Yeah.
No, I think that's great.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Clearly, yeah. I mean, you've had your finger in, I don't know, every aspect of comic books. You've written, you've published, you've edited, you've retailed. My guess is you know, when you were publishing, you were also lettering Any colors might have even been done by you at some point or another.
Yeah, I lettered the first Mac Afro miniseries, and if you look at the credit pages, if anybody has them out there, I always thought it was silly to give myself credit, so I credited Richard Pryor at one point. He was still alive, but he was in a wheelchair. There was this guy that was like a huge Mac Afro fan, so I gave him a lettering credit. Now I guess that could probably get him into Comic-Con now.
There you go. That's it.
But you know what? I suck at lettering, and it really is an underappreciated art form. Because you look at a book, it could have great artwork, it could have a great story, but if that lettering is not right, if those balloons aren't placed in the right place, and you know the fonts and the kerning and all this stuff, it really will. You know, you might not know that's what it is. It's taking you out of it. But there's, it's almost like having a dirty window to your house. You know. I now pay people. Johnny Lowe is my go-to guy.
About to say Johnny. We had him on a couple months ago when we did a show about Morning Glories, and he came on with us for a while.
Yeah, I probably can't afford him anymore, but I think some of his first lettering work was Gone South, and he was amazing. I think he studied over at Richard Starking's school back when Richard was teaching classes, and I mean, it looked really professional what he did, and I think we're going to be putting out Mac Afro again in a digital format. I think it needs to be relettered and maybe colored. I don't know how to color, so I just published it. I know how to get the trains running on time, pretty much, you know.
Yeah,
but it does give you a unique perspective, and you know, I'm very sympathetic to. Anybody that strikes out to do comics and puts their own, you know, butt on the line, for lack of a better word, because it's hard and the prospects aren't great. So, you know, anytime anybody comes to the Comic Bug with a finished comic book that they did, you know, the doors are wide open for them. They can sign. We encourage people to sign their books on a Wednesday night because it's New Comic Day. A lot of people come in the store anyway. You know, nobody's going to come out and see Joe Schmo if they don't know who Joe Schmo is. Right. But if they see him there and he's got an interesting-looking book they've never heard of, you know, people do quite well at the signings at the store. And, you know, we take books on consignment. I do everything I possibly can to support independent creators.
I see your postings all the time and all your invites. And, of course, you know, I'm in freaking Arizona, so I'm always tentative in attendee to your events, but they are frequent, man.
We do a lot, and I keep inviting you because it's like, dude, what do I have to do to get Caleb out to, you know?
Yeah.
Do I have to burn the store down again? What? it's weird when you're
out there. Maybe I'll cruise by and start a fire or something.
There you go. And you never know if somebody's going to be in town, too. I mean, you know, a lot of people come to L.A. all the time. So I just do it out of, a lick and a promise or hope and a dream or something. But and I, you know, I have invited people from out of town and they show up and my eyeballs pop out of my head. I'm like, dude, you're up in San Francisco. What are you doing here? So that's why those invites keep coming.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. So let me ask you a question. Okay,
yeah.
So one of our favorite topics here is new comics. We talk about it. And you mentioned that is your primary source is new comics.
Yes.
So you, as a retailer, you found out about a lot of the changes from both DC and Marvel pretty much when we did, right? I mean, you were not that much ahead of the news, I would assume.
Like no,
when
you
52.
Yeah, I mean, you know, DC and Marvel, they hold their cards close to their chest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, you know, you see retailers get upset about, you know, well, they didn't tell me Robin was going to die. You know, they didn't tell me this was going to happen. That's because there's a strategy, okay?
Yeah.
And they tell us everything they can. You know, DC says, hey, you might want to order up on Batman Inc. number 8. And, you know, Marvel told us to do that with Astonishing X-Men 50. And, you know, as a retailer, you're always like, okay, well, they think it's going to be big. Is it really going to be big, you know? So, you know, with the new 52, yeah, I mean, they want to keep it a surprise, and they can't, you know, it's sad, but retailers, some of them, not all, and maybe not most of them, have big mouths. Like, people love knowing something and being the first to tell the world, like, you know,
yeah,
something's going to happen. I actually knew Robin was going to die about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to be in Batman Incorporated number 8, but, you know. So you just never know, right?
We were just talking before you came on that I'm pissed off about that.
Are you mad about it?
Well, I was like, oh, they'll just bring him back. But then I saw all the covers for number 8, all the number 18 Bat books, and
mm-hmm. Yeah,
looks like they're going to make it stick. I mean, I wasn't happy.
Think about his creation and his existence even. You know, I mean, Son of the Demon was almost like it was a great book, don't get me wrong, but it was almost like it wasn't canon, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Grant Morrison did the brilliant thing of reintroducing them in Batman 655. And, you know, so, you know, Batman's got a kid. And
yeah, and I've loved it.
Yeah, but no matter, like, so is anomaly the right word? That's not the core of Batman. So, you know, that's something – it's an interesting aspect to explore, you know, with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But they always, always bring it back to status quo at some point. And, you know, I think Grant Morrison's leaving the book, so this is his way. You know, I've worked on a few licensed books in the past, and it's like I liken it to, you know, you're allowed to take these toys out of the box and play with them, but – when you leave, they have to be back in the package nicely and in mint condition, because, you know, what you're doing is, you know, you're not Joss Whedon writing Buffy, you know, you're so-and-so doing Buffy. Don't screw her up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And put her back where you found her. So, and that's what they do with you know, Superman and Batman, and, you know, we all know Peter Parker's going to be Spider-Man again very soon.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's that's you know, Grant Morrison's able to explore these, you know, these themes with, you know, mom and dad and mm-hmm. and how they basically ruined Robin's life, and that's important, you know. But I haven't read it all, and honestly, I've kind of fallen off of the Grant Morrison Batman, because Scott Snyder's stuff is so amazing, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
So yeah. Like Coke and Pepsi.
You get to continue to be a fan. That's cool. That's
yeah.
A good thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I'm not as involved in making comics right now as I once was.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get really into making comics, yeah, I think I have a lot of comic book creator friends. And, you know, they come into the store and they look at the walls. And, like, I won't say their names, but there were two comic creators just walking down the wall. And they're like, this sucks. This sucks. This sucks. This sucks. I'm like, come on, guys. And I showed them some of my favorite comics, Daredevil, Mark Waid's Daredevil, and
absolutely,
yeah, amazing book. Anything Rick Remender touches is gold in my book. So I showed them some stuff I thought was cool, and they would be like, "Yeah, I'm not really feeling it." And it's like, I think it's when you're making comics, you get so involved in your own creative process and the way you do things, and you don't. It's hard to appreciate, you know, different approaches. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's some sort of self awareness thing or something. But yeah, I'm more of a fan now than I was 2 years ago. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I think, you know, there's probably not a single solitary comic book creator who wasn't a fan at one point. It's a shame when they lose that ability to just appreciate the BAM and the BIF. And that kind of fun stuff, and just go, oh god, just another superhero comic. It's like, no, Hawkeye's not another superhero comic.
Right.
It's actually, mm-hmm. Batman's not another Batman comic anymore. I'm sure there's others that I could list, but my brain is fritzed on that again.
No, but yeah, you're totally right. And, you know, I mean, there are, you know, comic shop people, and there are creators who, you know, sort of become indie snobs. I love independent comics. You know, I love Matt Kidd's stuff, Mind Management.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that. Yeah, I've heard
oh, it's great. You gotta read and check out his other graphic novels. Three Story and Revolver are, I think, probably two of the best graphic novels in the last decade. And if you don't
Murray,
like
that's his wheelhouse, isn't it, Murray?
I've read, I'm reading his Mind Management. And I love it. I love it a lot. But I haven't read his other stuff yet. I'll probably pick it up this summer at the cons. I'm sure he'll be around somewhere.
Do you have a comic shop in your neighborhood?
Yes, we had three. Now I think we have two.
Well, go to one of them. Don't wait for Comic-Con. Just tell them you want Revolver. It's from Vertigo.
And oh, it's okay, okay.
And Three Stories from Dark Horse, and that's also in print. And, dude, I order those things by the case, and I blow through them. People love it. So, yeah, you won't be hurting yourself. Prophet's another comic I like a lot. You know, it's part of me likes it, I think, because it's Rob Liefeld's character, and, like, they're doing things that I know just makes Rob Liefeld, you know, pull his teeth out. And part of the reason I like it is because it's so weird and surreal and, you know, kind of doesn't make sense, but it's just beautiful to look at. And he has several different artists work on it, kind of like, you know, what Mark Waid does with Daredevil. He gets different artists, but they're all amazing artists that are working on those titles.
Mm-hmm. Who's the writer on Prophet? Is it Matt Kidd?
No, it's Brandon Graham.
Oh, okay.
And Simon Roy drew one of the issues. Drew a couple of the issues. Brandon Graham's drawn some of those. I haven't read any of Brandon Graham's other stuff, but apparently it's really good.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, so the point I was going to say is, you know, you can love that stuff. I can love that stuff, but I can still get down and dirty with an issue of Uncanny Avengers, you know, and have just as much fun with that. And, you know, I don't always need to be mentally stimulated and see something I hadn't seen before. Sometimes it's nice to see something you've seen before. I think that's what I like so much about Daredevil is it feels familiar in that, you know, it reminds me of when more comics were fun, you know, like in the 80s and you'd get almost an entire story in an issue, you know, as opposed to this padded out garbage that they're trying to, you know, stretch out to a trade paperback. So it's a very fulfilling, you know, fulfillment. That's what I'm looking for in life.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
I try to, right? Occasionally. If my wife allows me to.
Well, that's another problem, but yeah.
I took care of that. Personally, I took care of that problem.
Yourself?
Oh, yeah, I got a divorce. It fixed all that problem.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Problem solved.
You kids are learning stuff out there today.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't try this at home. So let me ask you again, as a retailer, I want to get back to that. I can't lose that focus for it just yet. So originally, like, okay, so Grant Morrison, good subject. He was originally said, I'm going to leave Action Comics at number 17. I think was originally what was publicized.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden it's 18. Did you know that before your orders on 18 or not?
No, I don't know if we did or not, but it doesn't matter because we definitely knew it when you guys know what the final order cutoff is.
Yeah, I've kind of an idea.
I know.
Yeah, so basically we can go in as a retailer a few weeks before a book goes to press. You can adjust your numbers. So, you know, like if, you know, you know, most stores probably went down when Grant Morrison left Action. They probably dropped their numbers 25% or whatever. We dropped it somewhat. But, oh, yeah, 18 is the big blowout, not 17. Okay, let's bring the numbers back up to, you know, what is consistent with a Grant Morrison Action comic. And, I mean, it really is – it's kind of an alchemy, you know. Like, this creator matched with that character. Like, Grant Morrison writing a new Vertigo title, probably 20 copies, you know, we'll get. Grant Morrison writing Batman is 100 copies, you know, so it's math.
Yeah.
So did you know, again, I don't want to harp on it. I will let it go. I was going to ask if that screwed up your numbers on 17, but whatever. I guess it doesn't matter.
No, probably... I don't think so. I mean, I read previews like feverishly when it comes in. It's so exciting because I get to see how not only am I going to waste all my customers' money or make them waste their money, but I can see how I waste my own money.
there you go.
Did you guys see that IDW is doing this artist edition of the Best of EC?
No, really?
Frank Frazetta. Yeah. Oh, man, all the greats. And it's like, dude, just, you know, here's the PIN number to my bank account, guys.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, and I guess I'm always like a glass half full kind of guy. And if the glass is less than half full, then go get a refill. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not one of these retailers that gets mad at DC for everything. We asked Jim Lee to do it. We went to the Morrison Con in Vegas. We crashed it because I think tickets were like $800.
Yeah, they were ridiculously expensive.
But we sat down with Jim Lee and, you know, we're like, dude, what would it take to do a signing? He's like, you guys were trashing me on News or whatever. I'm like, no, we weren't. We were not. Like, that wasn't us. And, you know, it wasn't. But the DC New 52. So we're driving home from Vegas. I was like, Jim, what's he talking? I know I said very good things about Jim Lee in that article. So we Googled it. And I guess what I said wasn't – I didn't trash him. But it wasn't like the kind of thing I could have sent to him and said, see, we didn't trash you. Look, come do a signing.
Yeah.
I was concerned that Jim Lee and Jeff Johns were the only two people that were designing the new DCU and that it wasn't like, you know, like when these characters were created, you know, Bob Kane and Siegel and Schuster and lots of different people created the characters. So they were diverse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was worried that everything was going to be kind of, you know, everything would look like, you know, Wildcats, which probably I hope Jim Lee doesn't hear me say that, too.
No, I don't think he's listening to this one.
I love his Wildcat stuff, so don't it's
no, no, but you know, I'm saying, like, I guess the character design, like, confession time. I'm not the hugest Jack Kirby fan. I'm not the hugest fan of his artwork. I don't dislike it. I just don't, like, you know. People worship at his altar, right?
Right. And, I'm with you. I don't really care for it
right.
either. Well, so,
anyway. Yeah. But if you think about like the designs that he did and the panel shots and what he brought to comic books, but you know, since we're talking about Jim Lee, we're going to talk about designs, okay? Like Jack Kirby is an amazing designer. He will design a character that you will look at once and never forget, you know, Galactus and or Silver Surfer, you know. If I'm not mistaken, did he design Spider-Man? I know Ditko drew Amazing Fantasy 15, but there's this, you know, that cover that Kirby did that he didn't use because he was too manly looking or whatever. Remember that?
I do remember hearing something about that.
That
I don't know if it ever went anywhere. But
he might not have designed it. But anyway, he designed everybody else. He designed Thor, you know, Captain America, all these iconic characters. And you know, I mean, I know what Spartan looks like, you know, but it doesn't, you know, send a lightning bolt through my soul, you know, like some of that other stuff does.
Yeah, I can see that.
So that was my concern. So anyway, we didn't forward it to Jim Lee because it didn't totally wash our hands clean and, you know, and I was excited about it, and I still am excited about the new 52. When you have 52 titles, they're not all going to be winners. Probably
right.
Less than half of them are going to be winners. But if you get 52 new books and 10 of them are awesome, which I think is true, then you're doing all right.
Yeah, I can go with that.
How has your crystal ball been in terms of the new 52?
How's my crystal ball been?
Yeah, have you felt like, oh, geez, that one's. I mean, you don't ever want to look at the.
Like which ones are going to get canceled?
Yeah, predict death. But have you been able to feel? And I'm not asking you to say anything out loud. I'm just kind of curious if you.
Well, you know, like they kind of announced the cancellations in batches. You know, like six titles are getting canceled, and you know, honestly, like none of the ones that I'm excited about have been canceled. So you know, there are certain books that they arrive. Kind of DOA, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain characters that really don't need their own title, you know? Mm-hmm. They're good in the context of a team, I think. But, they're pretty boring when you get them out on their own or her out on their own, whatever.
So can Constantine survive outside of Vertigo? Come on.
Here's what's going to happen, because Constantine, at our shop, we were ordering 15 copies of Constantine. I think it's going to sell significantly better. Renato Guedes is an amazing artist, number one. You know, Vertigo comics, I think, have a lifespan of about 75 issues. And then after that, they kind of just start treading water, you know? And, you know, they can't do all the cutting edge things that they were doing in Hellblazer. But how many of you guys were reading Hellblazer?
Not me.
I think it's zero.
Okay. How many of you guys are going to check out Constantine?
I am.
I'll get the first issue, but that's it. But I ain't gonna... Probably I like not. No.
I like Justice League Dark, so I will pick it up. So
yeah, so there we go. They've already increased their audience by 4 because I wasn't reading Hellblazer either. I'm gonna check out the new stuff and hope it's good. And it does. It looks cool. Like, and you know, it just kind of got stale over at Vertigo. And you know, Vertigo should be fresh and, you know, sort of the kind of thing you haven't seen before, like a Scalped or a DMZ or a Sweet Tooth. You know, Constantine was just kind of, you know, Swamp Thing. He was a B character in Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing ended, and he's just kind of lingering around in the alleys over there. You know. And not to say there haven't been some great storylines, but, you know, I don't think anybody's really cared about him since probably, you know, Mark Millar's run, maybe? I don't know. Or Garth Ennis's? I don't know. It's been a while. And there's certain Constantine trade paperbacks that sell really well. The Garth Ennis stuff, you know, holds. And then there's some that, like, I couldn't even tell you, you know, who wrote it or what it was about. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's a huge collection of trade paperbacks. 300 issues plus all the specials and stuff. Wow,
and they're not numbered either. They're doing it now where they're numbered, but a lot of them, like, and when I'm doing a reorder, like, it's hard because, like, I can look at my Ultimate Spider-Man section and say, okay, I'm missing number 2 and number 17. Get those, but Constantine, like, you have to pull out this alphabetical list and cross reference, and it's, you know, I'm sure that they're losing sales. So
yeah.
They didn't do that with the Sandmans originally either, though. They were just the titles of the storyline. And
as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, the first Sandman trade paperback was a Game of You, wasn't it? It wasn't even the first issues.
No, it was the second storyline. Yeah,
that's the second storyline. And they renamed the first collection, Preludes and Nocturnes, which sounds pretty insignificant if you ask me. Like, it's unnecessary. Prelude.
Yeah,
but it was awesome. No,
I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm just saying it was almost like this thing they didn't expect to take off. You know, I mean, same with Alan Moore's American Gothic. You know, it was then that was when people noticed what was happening over in Swamp Thing, and then you go back and see, oh wow, he's been doing this awesome crap for like a year now, and you know, I love it too. I love discovering a comic like that kind of media res. You know, like it's, you know. 5 or 6 issues in. That was my experience with Fear Agent. I think the cover to number 3 had him like blasting a laser through this robot's head. And before that, I thought it was about a guy that killed bugs. I didn't even look at it. But you can go back and like collect all the you know, you have some stuff there to you know. I'm a hoarder. I'm a collector. And I love the hunt. You know, so it's cool.
I missed that.
Yeah.
I wish I had a good retailer around here. Again, I really miss Atomic, and the one that's convenient for me, they kept screwing up my pull box.
Like missing titles on you and stuff.
Yeah. And as a borderline OCD about this stuff, that I really want my next issue of Comic XYZ. Mm-hmm. That was rough. So yeah, in a way. That's kind of a hoarder mentality, is I don't want to like go to stuff, but I need my my support group, and they weren't there for me. So.
Yeah, and that's part of the point of having a subscription service at a comic store. So, you know, I mean, the first and foremost thing is so you don't miss an issue. And I'm not saying we're perfect and we never miss pulling books for anybody, but if we miss a book, like, for somebody, and again, it doesn't happen often, but when we do, we make every effort to, you know, hunt it down. We'll go to conventions. We go to other comic shops in L.A. If I have to order it on eBay, but you know, that never happens at our store, you know, where you will never get the book if we missed it.
See, I wish you were close. We could, you know, I could come to your shop, because that's exactly the kind of stuff that I missed when I lived here before. I moved to around a lot, but when I was here before in Missouri, we'd go to a place called the Book Barn, and of course it's been bought out by this kind of a semi-large chain, kind of like a Hastings. It's kind of like a Hastings. It's called Vintage Stock, but it's not the same, you know.
Yeah.
I miss that kind of dedication to the customers, I guess.
Well, there's an apartment building that opened up next door to the shop, and the three of you guys could move in over there and split the rent.
There you go, yeah.
It'd be awesome. It's like $1,500 a month.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, Murray and I will leave our wives and children and move to L.A.
Well, one of you is divorced, right?
Yeah.
Come on out, man. Look at you, a great poster.
Good Lord. Right.
I can learn to surf again. Yay.
That would be fun. I think I would be a great surfer. I would at least be able to surf.
We're near the beach.
You do look like you'd be a good surfer, Murray.
I probably would not be a good surfer, but I think I could stand on a board and look good, or stand beside a board and look good.
Just like ride your bicycle down the beach with a thermal strap to your back.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
Get in your wetsuit and jump in the bathtub so you look like you've been in the water.
Oh, Lord.
Well, I'll go in the water. I just probably wouldn't surf very well, but so much fun.
Murray, we could Photoshop you into a surfing picture. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Someday.
Somebody get a still from Surf's Up and plug in Murray instead of Lynn Hank with us.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man. Now you need to pose in your surfing pose. So.
I think he always does that, though.
So what's coming up at the comic bug that that our listeners or that we can post out there and remind people that they need to show up at your doors?
Do you guys want an exclusive?
Yeah.
I would love it.
Sure.
Okay. Well, you guys heard about the Orson Scott card controversy, have you?
Yes, we have.
Your listeners know. So Orson Scott Card's been hired to write a Superman comic that's going to be published in, I think it's coming out in April or May. I don't know.
A new digital-only series, right?
It's a digital-only, but they're actually going to print it. They do that with it comes out like a month later in print form.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is not the first Orson Scott Card comic. I had no idea what his, what his beliefs were.
I didn't.
Do you guys know now?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He's
apparently very homophobic, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and that's. I have no problem if you know you're a bigot or if you're a homophobe or whatever. The problem is when you become an activist and it's your mission in life to stop people from being happy, you know, because it doesn't gel with, you know, the view of the world that you've been taught or whatever. Mm-hmm. So my first knowledge of this was when a very dear customer, Stu, came in and begged me not to carry the book. Now, I've never been asked not to carry a comic book before, and, you know, especially a Superman comic. So, you know, he told me, gave me the history of what was going on, and I was like, wow, you know. I mean, I'm a liberal person and very, sympathetic to my fellow man and woman. So I was like, shit, what do I do now? Because I also don't believe in censorship. And I said, well, you know, if people pre-ordered, what do I tell them? Like, you know, I'm not going to order it? Or, you know, what's going to happen is this comic's going to get in the news. It's going to sell far better than it would otherwise because it's going to be one of those things like you can't have it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like the new Chick-fil-A whose business went up dramatically. So it was a conundrum, and I think I figured out what I'm going to do. We are going to carry the book, and Stu told me that if we do carry the book, he's going to stage a protest in front of the store. I'm like, that's fine. You know, there's like 80 other comic shops in LA that are also going to carry it. You're doing it in front of my store because you're my buddy. I understand. And you know, I'm not going to hurt you. But we're going to give 100% of the proceeds of the money we make from sales of that book to a marriage equality charity.
Nice.
Oh, that's
we're going to
good.
Have a jar in the store where people can donate money to the cause of marriage equality. And we're going to match however much money people put in that jar the day the Superman, Orson Scott Card Superman book comes out. And we're going to donate all of that money to a marriage equality organization in honor of Orson Scott Card.
Wow.
Have you decided which one?
You know, Josh Dysart put a post out on Facebook today. Where
that's what that was about?
That's about. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, again, I'm giving you guys the exclusive here. I'm going to do a press release before the press release will be out before this airs. But, yeah, this is the first I've told anybody besides Josh what I was thinking. So
I thought that was one of his stories or something like that, but okay.
No. I told him to keep it vague. I said we want to keep this hush hush until, like I was saying with Marvel and DC, like keeping things close to the chest. You want it to have impact. You want as many people to know about it and be able to act on it as soon as they hear about it. Pretty much. So. So that way, you know, people can get their Superman comics because I'm sure a lot of people, like myself, are completists. You know that. You know, are also in support of gay marriage, so you can have your cake and eat it too and not feel bad.
I love that idea. I think that's great because people want to be able to support – like I think they want to be able to support not supporting Card, but
right.
But at the same time, like there are other creators in that book when it comes out who – like I mean Jeff Parker is going to have a story in that book and – he's a great creator. Like you hate to penalize someone because they just happen to be in the same, you know, 20 pages as you know what it like. So it's
right.
Great that we're thinking of different ways to still show their support for the gay lifestyle and still show their support for like. I think that's just a cool way to go.
Absolutely. Great idea.
And, you know, that's, you know.
I was just going to say, you're the crusading retailer.
Well, there's a lot of other retailers out there that you know, have made statements that they're going to refuse to carry the book. And you know what? I applaud them. You know, it's just I know the reality of the situation is, if we don't carry it, somebody's going to get it somewhere else.
Right.
Which, you know, number one thing of Fight Club is – no, don't talk about Fight Club. But with retailing, hey, don't – you know, retain your customers. Make your customers happy. That's the first rule of retailing, you know. Whatever your business is, make your people happy. And I'm doing my best to – because you're going to piss one side or the other off, you know, in this situation. So I'm doing my best to make as many people happy as possible. Do something that is important and slap Orson Scott Card in the face while we do it. Have you guys ever donated to charity?
Off and on, yeah.
Because when you donate to any charity, then you start getting like 1 year later, like, hey, last year you gave us this. Can you do that again? So, you know, maybe Orson Scott Card will get those letters in the mail.
You'll be on a mailing list with two guys kissing. It's
there you go.
And those will be the pictures he hangs on to.
That's awesome. Yeah, anybody that you know hates a segment of the population that much.
Yeah, it's
definitely
not...
got some demons. To, you know, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Look at the Pope.
Yeah.
Do I have to? It's scary.
If you're under 12, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it'll be interesting who they pick next for that. So, hey, that's really cool. So again, this is not your first crusade. Last year you were crusading. You had the Amazon thing going on. Are you still
crusading against that? I feel like it's the Last Crusade. You know, no, that was a month-long promotion that we did. And, again, I think that was when they debuted their little red light scanner where they encouraged you to go into bookstores, scan the barcodes,
right,
see the price difference on Amazon. I was like, well, fuck, I could play that game. Sorry, F-bomb.
No, that's all right.
I could play that game. I'm here in a brick and mortar. You know, I call the shots here. Like, Barnes & Noble couldn't do it. The manager of the Barnes & Noble in the area came over to applaud me. He's like, man, I wish I could do that at my store, you know, but the higher-ups would never let us do that. And I don't know if you guys saw the announcement, but Best Buy is doing that now.
Are they?
They're price matching. So you can go to Best Buy and, you know, show them what one of their products is selling for on Amazon. You know, not from an Amazon secondhand dealer, but like brand new on Amazon, it's this much. They'll price match.
Wow.
Amazon, you know, is a lot of people. I have a lot of, you know, very intelligent friends that unashamedly use Amazon. They are a very evil corporation if you take a look into some of the way that they run their business. I mean, it, you know, I feel like there's some sort of scandal popping up about them once a month. I think they had some warehouse in Germany. Did you guys hear about that?
Uh-uh.
No. They were using neo-Nazis as security. You know, again, this sounds so out there that I feel like I'm a tree-hugging hippie telling you guys this. But Google it if you don't believe me. My niece has staged protests at some of their, you know, shareholders meetings where they had actual Amazon employees. They bought stock for these employees that were suffering in one of the warehouses. And Amazon doesn't provide, or didn't at this point, provide air conditioning at some of their warehouses in these tremendous heats because it was cheaper to have a paramedics on hand than to have the AC running.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then, you know, the way they bully around publishers, you know, they really devalue, you know, our art form and any medium, but specifically comics. Look up any graphic novel on Amazon, and it's going to be 30% off. So if it's a $20 book, you know, you can get it on Amazon for $12. But, you know, that money is going somewhere, or that lack of money is hitting the publisher somewhere, you know.
True.
So it's like, well, okay, if people don't want to pay full cover price and they're happier doing this on Amazon, let's do that for a month and maybe we can change some buying habits. And, dude, we got some amazing press out of that. And, you know, a lot of people were happy to – I mean, people literally came out that hadn't been to the store before because they read about it in the paper. And,
wow.
Like, yeah, they, you know, we all love sticking it to the man, so.
That's awesome.
And in Orson Scott Card's case, literally.
Hey, there you go.
There it is.
Hey, come on. Can all make the gay reference every once in a while? Come on.
Yeah, true. We can do that.
Yeah, pop the cold for sure.
Yeah, I don't have any other crusades after that. You know, I mean, I get a lot of flack from some of my creator friends because I'm very anti Kickstarter, which, by the way, if you look, is owned by who?
I didn't know. I have no idea.
Amazon, or Amazon is part of that.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. But that's not why I don't like Kickstarter. The reason I don't like Kickstarter is because of the filtration system is non-existent. Mm. And, you know, any novice that wants to make a comic can get on there and put together a campaign and raise money and not make the comic and put the money in his pocket. It happens a lot.
This is true.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it?
You should do it.
Cool.
Need some money?
Yeah, need somebody to destroy my mortgage.
Well, I guess you have to make your goal, though, to get the money.
You have to make your goal as far as, yeah, reach your goals you've set as to how much money you want, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, you know, there's no legal binding between you actually producing what you said you're going to produce and, you know, that happening. And, I mean, yeah, read the legalese there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've looked at it before, but I've never – actually giving any money to any of those. So
yeah, well, my conundrum is I'm in a comic store and I'm known as an independent publisher, and you know, again, I'm very sympathetic to the cause of wanting to make comics. So people are always coming to me, hey, I got this Kickstarter, can you give me some money? And no, I can't. Go make your stuff. I know you. Like, I didn't have any money when I made comics, and you can do it. If you won't donate money to me, will you at least spread the word? And can I put flyers up in your store and this and that? And it's like, I just don't believe in it. I don't believe in a project until it's done. Even some of my own shit. It's like, I've had.
I understand that. I can understand that because I had made the mistake of, making a big deal about a tech book I was writing to, and it ended up taking 2.5 years to get finished. Some of it was my fault, some of it wasn't. And it kind of left it was embarrassing, and to me.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I can see that too. Because there's a lot of people who pre-ordered it, and the publisher set this publishing date that wasn't even realistic. Because they brought me in after somebody already started, and this whole deal, and it was like the product we were doing the book on wasn't even, it was still in beta, it wasn't even finished yet, And we get so far, and it, stuff would change, and then it was just a big mess. Anyway.
Well, again, back to, DC and Marvel, keep your cards close to your chest, and you have a lot more impact if it's for your next book. Don't tell anybody about it till it's done when it's ready to go. And it's like, hey, pow, there it is, and you don't embarrass yourself by saying it's going to be out and then 2 years later it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm totally guilty of it, Gone South was an annual series. One issue came out a year, and that's embarrassing. But, again, doing it myself, financing everything myself.
It's tough. It really is.
It's hard. It's really hard. But, once it's done, it's there, and nobody can take that from you. So.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
But DC and Marvel lately have been better about that, to their credit, I would think, at least from a reader point of view.
About what?
About not saying that something's coming when it's not actually ready to be out there. So.
Yeah, there were a few projects, what was Daredevil Bullseye? Was that the Kevin Smith one? They did one issue.
What, 5 years ago, 6 years
ago? Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah, no, they've been much better. I mean, and, both Marvel and DC, especially DC since their relaunch, have been extremely professional. To the point where they're pissing a lot of the creators off, apparently. But
I'm kidding.
Deadlines are everything, and you should be. I mean, comics are fun, and not to be taken too seriously. But when you're running a business, it's like, hey, you and it is a business. Like you have to have things out when they're supposed to be out and consistently and of a certain quality. And back to Kickstarter, I think a lot of the projects on there are guilty of not having one or two or all three of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, even Jim Lee had to step up and live by that same rule because, he had to step away from Justice League because he could not produce it on time. So he's like, you know what? Okay. Yeah. I have to live by my own rules.
Mm-hmm.
He's drawing the Scott Snyder Superman Man of Steel now, right?
I don't know.
That's what we've sort of heard.
I bet he is.
I think he is.
Yeah, I think he is.
Well,
he hasn't finished All Star Batman and Robin yet.
Well, is that his fault or is that
Yeah, it's probably Miller's fault.
Yeah, Frank Miller, man. Wow, he was a cool guy.
I met him when they used to have that little con at the was it the Ambassador Hotel in downtown or outside of Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm. The Shrine, maybe.
It probably was the Shrine, but I think maybe it'd been the one that moved to the Shrine, but it was at one of those old hotels off of Wilshire in the basement, And he was there. Arthur Adams was there at the same show. Bill Sienkiewicz. I mean, this was in, again, 87, 88. It was an amazing little collection of guys.
Yeah.
But he was cool. Was.
Yeah, I met him once a few years back at San Diego Golden Apple after party kind of wind down thing back when Bill Leibowitz was around. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was cool. Dave Stevens I met there too, and just the sweetest guy, you know. And both those guys, you know, were amazingly talented and just, you know, the gods that walk among us, you know, or that used to at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dave Stevens is already missed.
Oh yeah, sorely missed. Yes.
I'm liking that Rocketeer stuff though that IDW is putting out. So.
Their artist editions that they do are amazing. That the Rocketeer artist edition was just reissued and. Wow. Tremendous, tremendous stuff. And yeah, the Rocketeer anthology comics have been fun. Mm-hmm. I picked up the new one this week. I haven't had a chance to really read it yet, but yeah, it looks fun. But it's not Dave.
It's not. No. No, it's not. Oh, well. We'll move on, I guess.
Yeah.
So, any signings that we can look for you for at the store soon?
We've got I don't know if his name is Jerry Dugan or Gary Dugan, but we'll say Jerry Dugan from Deadpool coming up April 3rd with Scott Koblish, who's illustrating that issue. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a Deadpool pinata manufactured with condoms and airplane bottles of whiskey.
nice.
And Rick Remender's coming back for Free Comic Day along with Richard Starkings, Rafael Navarro, Neil Von Flew, who you guys don't know yet, but he's an amazing artist who's got a new graphic novel he's working on called Mustastronauts that Atomic Basement is going to hopefully be putting out. I'm editing it.
Nice.
So yeah, we got some really cool stuff coming up. And cosplayers.
Give Richard a big hug from me, would you please?
Richard Starkings?
Please, yeah.
I will. Who am I hugging him for, Caleb?
Yeah.
Okay, I will. I love hugging that guy. I hug him every time I see him.
He's huggable.
He is.
It's the hat.
Oh, man, you're killing me.
And the English accent, so.
Oh, God, yeah. It fools him every time.
It really does. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I have to head out pretty soon because I have to pick my son up from school.
Sure, that's fine.
But, you know, was there anything that you want to definitely not miss or not cover?
No, this was kind of what we were hoping for from retail. We talked to a gentleman by Chris Walsh a couple weeks ago. He retails out in outside of Kansas City. And hopefully we can revisit with you in a few months. Semi-regular, but what's your local access show? Do you want to plug that at all?
Yeah, it's Comic Book Geeks. There are some episodes on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
Not always for kids. Sometimes I'm heavily inebriated in some of them. And those are,
well, that's all right.
those are always a hoot. But yeah, that's we need to do some more. We haven't done one in a while, but there's that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Comic Bug is my bread and butter, and that's, again, www.thecomicbug.com.
Cool.
And Atomic Basement website is down, but we'll rise up like a phoenix and, you know, have to change the URL because we've been bought out by somebody.
Oh, really?
But that's okay. Hmm. You don't need no stinking website, do you? I guess you do, but.
Well, you know.
Kind of nowadays you do, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a funny story.
You guys were a Spirit of Comics nominee last year. Two years ago. Very cool.
Huh?
You guys were a Spirit of Comics nominee. Very cool.
Oh, we've been nominated a few times. Let me tell you a funny story before I go. This is my last story today.
Okay.
So I did a convention in 2003 in Chicago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a big Atomic Basement banner at this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Friday night, Saturday. You know, we did the show. Things were great. Show up Sunday morning, my banner is missing. Somebody has taken my banner, right?
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it sucks, but whatever. You know, it's just a banner.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, about a year ago, I was like, yeah, you know what? There's not an Atomic Basement Facebook page. So I, you know, get on Facebook, go to, like, line up my Atomic Basement Facebook page. and three of the ugliest motherfuckers you've ever seen are in this rock band called Atomic Basement. Like toothless, like backwoods crocodile looking dudes. So you'll have to link. I'll link you their page so you can put it on the story, and maybe they can get a whole bunch. I think they have like 17 fans.
Oh, that's hilarious.
We can at least bring it up by 50%. So
yeah, we could double that, right? Yeah. So I want to see them live. They look like they're from the backwoods of Chattanooga, but
Oh wow,
it was pretty funny to see my banner again. It's like, you know, when your son is kidnapped or something, and he's got a mustache and hanging out with inbreds and Deliverance.
Oh wow.
It's not bad, but
yeah, it's probably close, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, that might have been the galvanizing moment for this banner. Like, let's do this. We got a backdrop. It's what we always needed.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I appreciate the story. I'm looking forward to the photos.
Yeah.
Time to do the graphic novel. So.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool.
Okay, well, Mike, thanks for making the time.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. I'm going to be out in Los Angeles in a few weeks. Actually, we're going to be staying on the west side, so maybe I can convince my wife to let me come down there for a few minutes.
Totally, dude. Let's go grab a beer, man.
Possibly, I can even do that again. I got to beg permission, but no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I understand. I'm in the same boat. But yeah,
well, you know how to fix it.
Both beg really hard.
Okay, I'll reach out to you before I head out and make sure that you're available. So.
Cool. Sounds great. I'll try to schedule a signing while you're in town.
Ooh, better.
Ooh,
okay.
There you go.
Cool. All right, thanks, guys. Hey, it's nice meeting you, Chris and Murray. And thanks.
It's
nice talking to you, too, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks. So if I like something on here, is it going to mess up your show?
No, it's fine.
Okay, I'm real tech savvy. All right, guys. That's good.
All right.
Peace.
All right, bye.
So that is Mike Wellman from Comic Bug. In Manhattan Beach, outside of L.A. Yeah. That is a nice
good trip to Los Angeles.
Yeah, that sounds like
it. He's a good guy. And his pimp outfit collection, I thought he would still be doing it, but oh well. I saw him at least three different pimp outfits in the time I knew him.
Oh, wow. That's hilarious.
And one of them was at the Los Angeles Public Library, of all places. So.
Oh, wow.
He was willing to pimp out there.
Alrighty.
Well, thanks for indulging me on getting him on, guys.
Oh, man, no, that was fine. He's great. Great to have on.
Yes,
I think he's
good.
Still connected. He's probably listening to what we're saying about him.
That asshole. No.
No. All right, well, that does it for this week, I guess, right?
Yep.
Yes, I'm going to go drink some cough syrup.
Okay, all right, then. You still sick, man?
Oh, it sucks.
Well, you need to go to the doctor or something.
There's another whole story there.
All right, my doctor. Okay.
I went to the doctor. She told me I had a cold. Thank you very much. That, God damn it. I wanted her to tell me I had a sinus infection or something.
Oh, okay.
Here's how it works with my doctor. I go to my doctor. I make the diagnosis. He agrees and gives me some pills.
Well, there you go. That's perfect relationship right there.
Yeah. It's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I like Canada. Canada sounds cool.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to remember this doctor's like 108 years old.
Oh, okay.
And yeah.
All right. Then.
I know what I'm saying. It's all good. I am not an MD, however, so.
Well, that's all that matters, though. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah. All right. I'm at COVID. Oops.
Get us out of this, Chris. Quick.
Okay. As always, you can send us an email at podcast at talesfromthelongbox.com, or you can leave a message on the
Facebook page.
As an alternative, you can actually leave comments on the talesfromthelongbox.com/the show page, and I just added – oh, man, pardon me. Ugh, it's been a long day. Just added a new functionality where you can hit the like button on the posts. If you like
very
the podcast,
cool.
You can click it and say like.
Excellent.
A little, new WordPress functionality was enabled while we were recording there. And that's about it for this week. So
peace out, bro.
Yeah.
Julio, we'll see y'all next week.
Yeah. See you next week.
Okay, bye. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go hug my wife.
Okay.
Aw, that's sweet.
Isn't it? It
is sweet.
All right, hug her for me too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Good night, guys.
Night.
Bye.
Bye.